It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will. But then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
I see.
So Dr. Pepper,
yeah,
recently came out with a blackberry flavor.
Oh.
And the children in my life really like it.
Oh.
I'd heard this. And I was like, I want to try it. But maybe they don't have a zero sugar version.
That's
a
blackberry.
And they don't.
Oh.
Everywhere else. Like, I go to the convenience store, which is usually, I try not to keep pop just like in the house. So I go to the convenience store to get one, and they got all the blackberry. They don't got a zero sugar. And I'm like, because they make diet everything else, Dr. Pepper. But they had a 12-pack at the grocery store, and I'd seen that for a couple of weeks. And as I mentioned before we started recording, this weekend I'm on my own, so I've been stocking supplies of junk food and crap for me. So got some of this.
Is it any good?
Oh, no, it's quite terrible.
Oh, why do kids like it?
I don't know. I didn't get it knowing it was bad. Like, I assumed they liked it because it was good. No, it's not. And I, in general, like Dr. Pepper flavors.
Hmm.
No, it is quite simply, the blackberry taste is very medicine-y.
Oh.
And that's just, you know, right over the plate how to fuck that up. you had one job.
I must not mind medicine-y stuff. Like, you know, a lot of times cherry flavor is medicine-y. I just don't think I mind it. And
I'm still drinking them. You get used to it. That first drink, you're like, but then you sort of get used to it. But yeah, I mean, I had I known what it tastes like, I definitely wouldn't have bought a 12-pack.
Huh. Well, I wonder if my tolerance for medicine-y things comes from liking like sarsaparilla, because sarsaparilla and root beers that are heavily reliant on sarsaparilla, I think we've discussed this, when people in Europe have them, they don't like them because they say they taste like medicine, which...
Yeah.
Which, I mean...
Because anything herbaceous.
Yeah.
Tasting
something about that, right.
Yeah.
Doesn't bother me, but I don't know.
It varies. Like, I find this one very interesting. So there's the flavor of strawberries.
Mm-hmm.
And then there is fake strawberry flavor.
Right.
And they are very different things.
Mm-hmm.
I like them both. But I live in a life where I am quite close to a person who hates fake strawberry but loves real strawberry. And quite close to a person who does not care for strawberries but likes fake strawberry flavor.
Wow.
But this is, and as somebody who likes both of them quite a lot, I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. They are drastically different. Like, it is only by coincidence that I like both of them.
Well, I mean, you can tell the fake strawberry is trying to simulate real strawberry. I mean, they're close enough
that you
can tell that. But you're right.
Yeah, but
they're
it
different.
Doesn't.
No. Like, they're different enough that it makes sense. You might not like
well,
one.
And the idea of like, I like strawberries and I don't like fake strawberry flavor, that made sense to me. But the first time this person was like, no, I like the fake stuff. I don't like strawberry. And I was like, how is that possible? I'm like, in the same exact way. It's just different tastes.
Yeah, exactly right.
I mean, I'm something of a gourmand anyway. I eat most things, but I really have a knack for, like, I can appreciate good, simple, natural ingredient food.
Mm-hmm.
And I also can eat stuff that I guarantee you I couldn't name a single ingredient in it. And it's kind of rubbery, and it's a color that does not exist in nature. Super tasty. So, I have a breadth of enjoyment there.
Well.
This was not intended to be the cold open. I was just going to talk for a second about this. What I really wanted to talk about is the benefit of being a friend of yours.
Uh-oh.
Don't worry, I said benefit, singular. Don't get
I
too
know, but these are
worried.
always backhanded compliments, so I gotta
Well, I
prepare
mean,
myself.
there used to be one good reason to be friends with you, and that was the tax credit I got. But then that went away when you went back to school. No, the thing is, there are things that I find interesting that I can't ask my therapist because that would be a waste of their well-paid professional time. But you, on the other hand,
Oh, this is like when you know a lawyer and you get free legal advice, or you know an accountant and you get free
sort
financial
of, but this
advice.
is more like I have something I want to ask a therapist, but it's too pointless and self-indulgent to waste the time of a real therapist. So I've got you,
Oh yeah, okay, not a real therapist.
who's a real therapist, but you know
Sure.
what?
Okay.
But to be fair, you shouldn't take that one as an insult. You are a therapist whose services I can never use. So in my world, you're essentially not a therapist. Because again, when I
Okay.
close my eyes, you all vanish. So basically,
Yes.
you're not a therapist. But so here is my question, and it will become relevant why this came up later in the episode. But how, and this is actually a better question for you than my therapist, I think, based on your personal experience. Now, being a therapist and knowing what that involves and what and knowing more intimately what a therapist does, and now, but now just thinking back into your previous thoughts on whatever. Have you ever seen a good therapist in a movie? Because as years go on, I am just shocked by every single therapist character, whether they're supposed to be viewed as bad or not, are just the worst. In terms of the advice they give, in terms of the boundaries they set. And sometimes that's the joke, but sometimes it's not. And I'm just like, I don't know the exact procedure by which you lose your license, but I feel like every single therapist in every single movie would lose their license the moment anyone found out. So I'm just curious, have you ever seen a good therapist in a movie?
So yeah, you're right. It is different being in the profession and seeing it, right? Like, I mean, I've always
I was,
had,
well, you know more like what would happen if a real therapist acted that way.
I mean, I've always had criticisms of therapists and things, but not obviously not as a therapist, and it is different. But I can say this, there's not there's no situation I can think of where I could say, yeah, I thought that was a perfectly fine therapist, but now that I am one, I don't. That's not true. Like,
Okay.
if I thought the therapist was bad, now I think they're even worse. Right? It's like, wow, I didn't even know how bad they were, but I knew they were bad, but I didn't know they were this bad.
See, because I'm as a therapy enthusiast, mine has changed. I mean, I can't think of a specific example, but there are things now where I'm like, that's not like, because sometimes there are things that's like, oh, that like it's not meant to be a bad thing. It's like, oh, they seem nice. I'm like, that is grossly inappropriate.
Yeah, well, so sometimes, okay, so what I noticed now that I might have just sort of glossed over or didn't notice before was w when they're doing professionally inappropriate things. I never really thought about that before, right? The only thing that would bother me in the past is, well, that seems like the wrong question to ask, or that seems like really bad advice.
Being mean
Yeah, or something,
a lot
but.
of mean therapists in movies. A lot
Yeah,
of mean ones.
but now, of course, I'm quite certain I never thought about it before. Now it's like, oh, you can't really do that. What they're doing. That's they could get in trouble for doing that. I never thought about that before because I didn't think about rules and, you know, the boards that oversee. I didn't think about that stuff.
Yeah. Initial question stands up. Can you think of a good one?
No. I
I the only one I can think of, and it's because I've never seen it. I'm like, Robin Williams in Good Will Hunting, was he?
was thinking about him actually as we were talking.
Like, the movie definitely presented him as such, but I've never seen the movie, so.
Well, and I have a couple times, and I can't remember. Like I said, I didn't think in terms of, oh, he shouldn't be doing that. So I don't remember that part.
Yeah.
I remember wondering when I first saw it, like, wow, is this really how therapy works? Because this seems weird to me. I didn't walk away from that film anytime I ever saw it thinking, well, that's a good example of therapy or that's a good therapist.
That wasn't what inspired you to go.
Oh, not at all. Now, I've seen therapists in things before and since where I thought, oh, that's actually a pretty good representation of the discipline. And I've also seen ones where maybe they weren't very good representation of the discipline, but I thought I would tell my colleagues about, oh, you have to see this, you know, because of the therapy aspect of
Yeah,
it.
yeah, yeah.
Not because they were necessarily good or bad, but just because I thought that the therapy aspect of the story was effective or compelling. So, in other words, when I watch something with a therapist or therapy in it, there's a lot of considerations. It's not just whether or not the person's a good therapist. So I have to sort of sort through all that to see, well, what did I think? Did I think this person was a good therapist? But I can't think of a single time I thought, wow, that's a really, not only is that a good representation of therapy, but this is actually a good representation of good therapy. Now I can't think of a single time I've
Yeah,
ever thought that.
I've been on a string lately of ones of movies where there's just terrible therapists. And sometimes that's the joke. But other times I'm like, oh, they don't realize how it's another one of those weird professions. Massage therapy is another version of this that's still very opaque to modern sensibilities. Which is weird at this point, because I feel like, I mean, again, maybe it's a bubble I live in, but I know so many people who've been to therapy. Like, I feel like in your average group of people, a couple people at least are going to have been to therapy, and like, we sort of all know what it's about. But it's one of those that movies are still just like, we can do anything and you don't know.
All right. Well, you can tell in most stories, and at least I feel like a person can tell that they're using it as a particular kind of device. Like, how can I get the audience to understand what's going on? Oh, I'll have them talk to their therapist about it. And there's no incentive for them to make it authentic or anything.
Yeah.
They're just trying to achieve
Or
a
it's
certain narrative thing.
comic relief therapist has become a thing.
So it's like, but there are times where it's pretty clear that the story being told is a little bit about mental health, right? A little bit about that. And so then you can see someone's trying to make some effort to make this seem authentic. But sometimes you get the impression that the authenticity comes completely from their own experience with therapy, for example. Like they didn't really
Yeah.
consult with a therapist or whatever, which is
There's a
that's also
lot
fine
of
and fair.
therapists just telling people what their issue is.
Like diagnosing them, like boom.
And just like within a sentence or two, and frequently being like, no, you're wrong.
Yeah.
They'll say, like, I feel like I'm like this and I have this problem. They're like, no, that's not what your deal is. This is your deal.
Yeah.
And it's
And
always like at the first session.
right. Well, yeah, exactly. And the thing is, there's lots of ways to do therapy and what you do in a particular session is not just determined, well, I mean, in my view, if you're doing it right, it's not just determined by your own preferences or your own theoretical biases or whatever. It's determined a little bit by the person, what their personality's like, what problem they seem to be presenting, what their cultural background is. And, you know, so if you recorded my sessions and you could watch them, I might seem like a completely different person in this session versus this session because I'm talking to a completely different person. But a lot of times, so it's hard. It's hard to like if I were writing something with a therapist in it, I would really struggle to know. And if I thought to myself, I really want to be responsible with how I'm portraying this, the discipline here, I would struggle to know exactly how to do it right. Or if I felt like, oh, this is perfect, this is a great representation of it, I might think, but from a storytelling perspective, this is dumb. I mean, this is boring. This isn't interesting. This doesn't, nobody's, you know, this is, people are just going to be bored by this scene, right? So
in order to achieve both authenticity and keeping it tight so that people don't get bored.
Yeah.
I think the sum total has to just be the therapist saying, we're about out of time. That's the universal construct. Although my therapist says it's about the time we need to stop, which I think is a very deliberate word choice there.
So yeah, I think even if I was introduced to someone who was a filmmaker or maybe made a film that I had questions about, and I found out they took it very seriously and they got a consultant, they did all this work, I can still imagine it being a huge challenge to not make the, you know, to use the therapeutic situation as a plot device and as, you know, something, and not kind of portray it in a way that's not what most therapists would watch and go, no, that doesn't make any sense. You can't do it like that. Because I think it's hard to integrate it into a story in an interesting way. Yeah. And I think that's why so many times the therapists are bad, because what's interesting about a good therapist?
All this flies out the window. I think I just came up with a perfect example. Frasier. Frasier is a perfect psychology therapist. All are, no questions. All right, we solved it. It's done. Never mind. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Magic Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world that figured out the best therapist ever is Frasier. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 738. Hey, you were in the.
I was, and Witch I was looking good, if I'm honest. I was
hey,
a good shot of me.
Why don't you just pick?
I have no idea what's going on. I don't know how it decides.
Why don't you just pick the thumbnail? Why don't you just pick it?
I don't know how that. Oh. What?
Well, I mean, okay, I know it's been a long time since I uploaded a YouTube video, but I recall you could pick the thumbnail from a still, or you could upload one that you made. So I've often wondered why you just don't pick one.
I have not encountered a step in the process where it was evident that is a thing that can happen.
Yeah, maybe they don't do that.
So, to be fair, I haven't gone looking for it because, again, kind of our whole deal, not trying.
Okay.
The only podcast in the world that is this close to just outsourcing the whole thing.
All right.
So, for those of you just joining us for the first time, we are a therapist. We have a hat. It is magic in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And it also has its own Blue Sky account at magicaltalkinghat.besky.social. Anyway, the hat's magical for those reasons, but also people email right into that email. themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com with notes, topics, comments, questions, things like that. And the hat magically on its own through magic forwards email to us. And we're like, whoa, a hat forwarding an email. And then we read them and that's the show.
Yeah.
Whoa. How'd that hat do that? Fucking magnets, man. How do they work? We reference, I would in general say we are not a Juggalo household. We are not Insane Clown Posse fans overall within our home.
Okay.
But we quote that line about fucking magnets, how do they work, all the time.
I forgot it came from that.
Yes, that's Insane Clown Posse.
Yeah.
Fucking Magnus, how do they work?
That's good.
Beautiful stuff. All right. How is your week?
That was good. We had the kids over last weekend, which was fun.
Oh, nice.
Been watching a lot of docuseries, which, as everyone probably knows, is my favorite media source ever since I was a little kid watching Nova with my maternal grandfather. So that puts me in a good mood when I get to watch a lot of cool docuseries. That doesn't make for interesting conversation, but that's what I like. What else? Seems like we might have seen a movie or two, but like I don't remember because I don't think it was very good. But yeah, that's mostly but and work. So not a lot to talk about, but I feel like I've had a pretty good week. How about you?
Nice. Pretty good, I think. We are still I talked about Los Espookys, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're still watching it. It's good. It's a very weird show, but it's fun. It's a Lorne Michaels thing. And it feels like that. Like it has that snappy dialogue that you expect from that kind of show. But it's also in Spanish, so that's weird. And it's also apparently it's not set in Mexico. It's set in a fictional Latin American country. So I keep trying to be like, what of the various Lorne Michaels properties does this most remind me of? And weirdly, what I came up with was 30 Rock. And I mean, the premises could not be more different, but the heightened reality of it, where like things are normal and then suddenly not normal for like one joke, like it's that. It's a lot of that. And I also think it's probably way cooler. This is the thing we ran into. So nowadays we pretty much have the captions on for everything we watch. We are old. We are sad people. We just have one. But for a while we were selective, and frequently I wouldn't have it on during comedies because the joke can get fucked up if you're reading it instead and the pacing isn't as good. And when it's the language you don't speak, it's all that. So
Yeah.
there's a lot of stuff in this that I like it. It's very good. I recommend it. But I'm like, I'll bet. And apparently I think it is because my brother-in-law, who is fluently bilingual, watches it, and I think it's way funnier for him because things are actually on the beat, as it were. But it's a very fun time, and it's a very silly show, and we're enjoying that. Watch a ton of movies, so let me run you through this. Oh, and Jordan Breeding's newest series recap video, Tremors.
Oh.
I'm pretty impressed you managed to get through seven of those. Whew.
Well, I did fall asleep for some
Yeah, still.
of them.
All right. It appears I've seen six movies, one of which is a comedy special, so it doesn't count. I want to go through these fast. I know what email we have, and I'm really curious to see how that goes down, so I really want to get to that. So I'm just going to hit up these kind of quick. Hatching. I believe this is available on Hulu. It is available on Shudder if you're not in the US, but in the US, Hulu has it for some reason. It's a Finnish horror movie about a girl who finds an egg and she hatches it and something weird comes out of it. And it's yet another one of these movies that is like a feminist metaphor. And we've recently discovered this is Trish's like favorite subgenre. So I thought this was a very good movie. Trish really liked it. If you're into those kind of movies, where the monster was her rage at the patriarchy kind of thing, it's that kind of movie, and we love those in our house. Second best night of your life. It's on Max. It is a comedy special from Brett Goldstein, aka Roy fucking Kent from Ted Lasso. It's really good.
No.
He's very funny. I already sort of knew this. Because I've seen him a lot since Ted Lasso, outside of Ted Lasso stuff. It's a real good time. If you like Ted Lasso, it's fun for that. But if you've never seen Ted Lasso, it's still really good. He references it, obviously, but there's not a lot about it. Yeah, it's, I don't know what to say other than it's a very good stand-up special, and I highly recommend it, especially if you, like me, have become a fan of that gentleman's.
Cool.
So there we are. Let us see. Drive. Talked about Drive before. Now, there's several movies named Drive. I think we're gonna have to veto any more movies named Drive. There are too many movies named Drive. This one is from 1997 and stars Mark Dacascos and Kadeem Hardison. It is kind of a odd couple action comedy thing. And I saw it years ago and really, really liked it. And have talked about it since, and nobody ever knows what it is, and nobody's heard of it, and no streaming service ever heard of it. And now it's on Tubi, and so I made Trish watch it, having not seen it myself in like, 25 years or whatever. I still enjoy it. If you like actual good action, it's good for that. Weirdly, Kadeem Hardison and Mark Dacascos kind of have good chemistry. And also, Brittany Murphy, rest in peace, was in this, and is hilarious and made me really sad that she's gone. Because as years have gone on, I'm like, nobody else can do a Brittany Murphy character. It's a very, she had a very specific vibe, and I miss that. She does great in this. And I really enjoyed watching it again. I also 100% get why everyone on the planet collectively forgot it exists. Like, it's fine to, we can all pretend it doesn't exist and our lives will be the same. I still enjoy it, but if you tell me you don't, I'm like, of course you don't. Like, why? No, whatever. But anyway, and you want to check that out on Tubi, go for it. All right, some of these I want to actually talk about, and so I'm trying to balance it out here. All right, Broken Arrow. The other night, my wife says, I want to watch a movie. I say, what kind of movie do you want to watch, my love? And she says, I want a movie with explosions. And I'm like, there's a movie I've been wanting us to watch for a while that I know has at least one explosion in it and is the sort of movie that I expect has more. So let's watch that. So I put on Broken Arrow, which neither of us had ever seen. And let me tell you, brief fulfilled. At least by our count, nine major real explosions. Very little else to recommend this movie.
Yeah, I think I've only seen it once, like shortly after it came out. Is Nicolas Cage in that?
No, he's not, but I know why you think that.
Why do I think that?
Because for some reason, Travolta is trying and failing to play the character from Face Off
Okay.
so
You're
hard.
right. That probably is why I think
Like,
that.
and this is the thing, it's another John Woo movie. And I in the middle of the film, I paused it and I said, is maybe John Woo a bad director and none of us ever noticed because his movies are so entertaining? Because like, I love John Woo movies, and he's well loved as a director, but I don't know that good is the right, entertaining, super entertaining, but good quality, making sense, people acting like humans. So I had a real fun time. Also, the climax of the movie is a literal stare down between a nuclear missile and John Travolta. And that's fun. That's actually how this movie originally appeared on my radar years ago. Obsessive Pop Culture Disorder did a thing on unintentionally hilarious deaths in movies, and it had the ending of this movie, and it is hilarious because it is literally a long shot of a missile coming down a train toward John Travolta, who is like, "Come at me, bro." And then a very clear dummy gets shot out of a hole in the back of a train when it's over. It's a fun time. But yeah, if you liked shit like The Rock and Face Off, you will like this movie in exactly the same way. Travolta got real focused on smoking his cigarettes eccentrically in this movie. Like, a lot of his villaining was just like I don't know what was happening, but it was. I watched this and I'm like, Saturday Night Fever was a good movie. What happened to you? All right, what's up? All right. The Private Eyes. The Private Eyes. Come on.
No.
This feels like your kind of thing. Maybe you're too old.
Who's in it?
Jim Conway, Don Knotts.
Oh, that Private Eyes. Yeah, I probably saw that in a drive-in or something when I was a kid. Depends on when it
It's
came
from
out.
1980. It is the last film they did together.
Well, maybe I didn't see it in the drive-in then. Could have.
It popped one of the YouTubes likes to do, like, here's a list of some overlooked movies or TV shows. And they were like, I'm just gonna start doing them by year. And then they're like, so here's some from 1980. And they had this. Trish likes old school physical comedy. Trish grew up enjoying the Three Stooges. And she watched stuff like Tim Conway, Don Knotts things.
Yeah,
That's
I've seen many
kind
of
of
them.
her.
Apple Dumpling Gang and all that.
Exactly. I did not. I don't like physical comedy. I don't find it amusing, straight up. Not my thing at all. This popped up. And I was like, oh, maybe we should watch this sometime for Trish. She might enjoy it. Maybe she already knows it. I don't know. But also, it came up because it's meant to be British. It's not. It's set in Biltmore Mansion or whatever. But it's meant to be set in Britain, and it's kind of a parody of Sherlock Holmes, and but it's a very like British spooky murder thing, but with Don Knotts and Tim Conway. And it was actually the thing I was watching talking about it was like it's basically Don Knotts and Tim Conway if they got put into a Hammer horror movie. And I was like, oh my God, so this is the thing Trish likes combined with the thing I like. Let's watch. And I didn't expect to enjoy it. I mean, I thought it'd be fine, but I did it for her. She'd had a rough day, and I'm like, I think I know a movie for you. Turns out she saw it when she was a kid, so she already knew. But or she thinks she did. She's not positive. It's fun. It's good. I laughed out loud a fair bit. I don't give Tim Conway enough credit.
Very funny guy, very funny.
And a lot of it was physical, and also he co-wrote this. I mean, I guess sort of spoiler. So one of the gags is they're communicating with Scotland Yard via carrier pigeon. We don't specify the time, what year or whatever, but it looks relatively modern day, so late 70s maybe. But it's hard to tell for sure. But they're doing carrier pigeons. That's a joke. We brought a whole crate of carrier pigeons or whatever. And we keep trying to send messages, and then something goes wrong with the bird. It gets shot down or whatever, and that's sort of the joke. But the first time we get one, we put the note in the thing, and Tim Conway's got it, and he goes to the window and he throws it, and the window's not open. And so the pigeon just slams through a plate of glass. And then, in the most inspired thing ever, they hired, and I know this because it came up in a different part in the movie, they hired a pigeon who was trained to like stumble around and kind of like somersault and just be like, what the fuck hit me? And I had to pause the movie. I was laughing so hard. It's the best gag ever. Because it's just so calm. And I'm just like, I always think my favorite Tim Conway bit is a Carol Burnett Show bit. That's one of the Mama's Family ones. And he goes off on this rant about going to the circus
Siamese
and
elephants, yeah.
the Siamese elephants. And instead
Yeah.
of, they just went Nurgi.
Yeah.
And I always think of that one, but this gives it a run for its money. This was a really good bit. And yeah, there's a different section later where a pigeon gets fucked up. And I seriously was like, that's not animatronic, right? But it was like too small. I'm like, no, that is just a very well-trained pigeon, and it's hilarious. So that was a fun time with that one. Yeah, I enjoyed that. All right. But the reason I brought up the therapist stuff is we watched the movie Psycho Therapy. Just came out fairly recently, I believe.
Oh, okay.
It is a movie. Okay, so an actor you probably don't know, I also did not know, is a writer, but he's not very successful, and he's married to Helly from Severance. She's sick of him being useless and nothing, and is gonna divorce him. And this is bad. Simultaneously, Steve Buscemi shows up and says, hey, I think you should write a book on a serial killer. Guess what? I'm a serial killer. But like, I never got caught. So like, I'll tell you my shit and you'll write a book about it. It'll be awesome. And the guy is like, I don't know, maybe I do need to do something, and my wife's gonna leave me or whatever. Anyway, due to hijinks, the actor you don't know has to convince his wife, Helly from Severance, that this guy is a marriage counselor. So Steve Buscemi, retired serial killer, is trying to teach our protagonist about serial killing while also pretending to be a marriage counselor for these two individuals. And if you thought for a moment that hijinks did not ensue, you're full of shit. Because so many hijinks ensue. And we were very excited. Steve Buscemi is a big part of that. Also, Britt Lower, who's Helly from Severance, were really coming to enjoy her. And so we were very excited that this was coming. I think it's a brilliant premise. But yeah, Steve Buscemi, the serial killer, is not a very good therapist. Spoilers.
Not a very good marriage therapist, really?
Spoilers. I do love them trying to explain it though. Like he's like, no, it's easy. Just fake it. Just keep talking about how we're in a safe space. And then if anybody asks a question, just say, is that what you really think? And then that's it. And I was like, I'm not saying that is therapy, but that's not the worst way to fake therapy.
Yeah, I actually have a lot to say about that, but maybe I better not.
But anyway, wasn't good.
Okay, that's
I
too bad.
don't, it's one of these movies, and this is a thing I've come up with. I don't know. See if this makes sense to you when I say this. It felt like the entire thing was like one step to the left of being a movie I really would have liked. Like, it just didn't gel. Like, and part of it is actually what ends up being the thrust of the plot isn't like they didn't go in the right direction with this premise, in my opinion. Like, it doesn't do what I wanted to do. Also, the actor who I don't know, who's the protagonist, isn't doing great. But what I really think it is, and I looked it up because it was just bothering, the whole thing screams first time writer director in a big way, because it's like really good idea and execution. And I looked it up, and it's not a first time writer director. It is the same writer and same person wrote and direct, and they've got about 10 credits writing and in directing and in producing, 10 in each, mostly the same things. But the gentleman is Turkish, and this appears to be his first feature length English language piece. So I don't know if that's what did it. I don't know.
Hard to say.
There's a lot going on. I think it could be fun for you to watch just to like laugh at as a therapist. Be like, oh my God. Because there are some things that like the movie doesn't even want you to think is good therapy ideas, but that are still very funny, in my opinion. But and I did, it has a couple good laughs. And I would say the very end, like the last 15 minutes, are really good. We quickly discover that Britt Lower and Steve Buscemi should have spent a lot more time together because they have great chemistry, but they're not together for most of the movie. So that, oh, also doesn't have an ending. Like, we just stop, and a lot of things happened in the scene where we just stopped, but nothing's resolved. And then we're just done.
Maybe she should have been the therapist. I mean, actually,
Something, I
it's a
don't know. It
female-dominated field the way it is, so
it's
that would have
I
worked.
spent half the movie thinking, oh shit, maybe Britt Lower is not a comedic actor,
Well,
because it was not doing. And then but then later on in the movie I was like, oh no, it was just not good material. So yeah, I didn't love that. But anyway, let's do email, because the hat may have given me a little sneak peek of this email, and I'm kind of excited. Also, we haven't done one in a couple weeks, so it's probably time.
This is from Mick.
I heard
Hi hat. Get it? Anyway,
it.
when I was six, this is from Mick. When I was 6 years old, I was introduced to a communications model that I have modeled my life after. It's called transactional analysis. I was even given a book of it called TA for Kids, which is weird. I have strived to talk to people about talk to people in adult to adult transactions. A balanced, equitable ego state on both sides. That's adult transactions. That's what that's supposed to be. My problems come when the person I'm talking to decides to use the other ego states, the dominant parent state or the immature child state, when being expressed as an adult. It's all too easy for people to play games and communicational transactions and slide you out of balance. Gaslighting is a textbook example of a crossed transaction, which I have found leads to chaos in interpersonal relationships. I understand that one hat wrangler has mastered this topic, but I'm interested in what both of you think. Does transactional analysis have what it takes to navigate today's wild world?
All right. I do want to say up front, my favorite ego state is what I like to call tipsy gremlin. But we'll set that aside. William, you're ostensibly someone who gets given money to be a therapist. What the heck is transactional analysis, and what does it mean to us?
Well, Mick
This is where
actually
you tell
gives,
me you've never heard of this.
oh no, I've heard of it. Mick gives a pretty good description of it. And I know there
Well,
are,
that's a bad sign, because I don't understand it based on Mitch's
oh,
description.
I'm sorry. And I know I don't know, but I suspect there are a lot of people who might hear me talk about it and think I'm oversimplifying it, even though I don't think I am, because I am not that impressed with transactional analysis, to be fair. I'll just say that right up front. I'm not saying it's like wrong or something. It's well, anyway. It has to do with, I mean, I'll just keep it simple. Well, just like what he was saying, when people interact with one another, and that's part of the problem with transactional analysis is this name, transactional analysis. It's whatever. They can interact with each other on, like, when you and I interact with one another, you are an adult and I am an adult, and we interact like adults. In contrast to if you were interacting with me in the parental way, right? Like you were treating me like I was a child, or if I was acting like a child, or if I was communicating with you like I was a child or dependent on you. And these are like the three main ways that people communicate as far as transactional analysis is concerned, which I hope people are realizing that's a really limited way of understanding how people communicate. But transactional analysis, and maybe some people would say a really bad and unsophisticated application of it, but whatever. Transactional analysis really does try to understand when people are communicating, like, what is their ego state? Is it an adult ego state, a parent ego state, or a child ego state? And there are some people who think that you can analyze every interaction based on that. Now, once you've decided that an interaction is an adult, like you're acting like an adult and I'm acting like an adult, we're communicating with each other like an adult, there are other ways to analyze the interaction after that initial assessment of what our ego states are. But the ego states thing is really a big part of it. And then they have labels for different problems in communication, like Mick was talking about, this type of communication problem, we call it this, and this type of communication problem, we call it that. And by categorizing different types of communication problems, they like to think that they can analyze communication thoroughly enough that when you and I have some kind of problem, let's say you and I go to therapy because, we don't get along and we want to get along better. We want to salvage our friendship, whatever it is. They would look at how we communicate and they would analyze it based on this model of ego states, and they would put a label on what our communication problem is. And then they can fix that communication problem and that will fix our relationship. You follow what I'm saying? And the general
I think
approach.
so. It doesn't sound great.
Well, I mean,
To be honest, it sounds very, I don't know if normative or judgmental is the right word.
well,
It
it's
says to me, oh, you guys are just doing communication wrong. We'll show you the right way. And I mean, to be fair, that is sort of a chunk of what therapy is in some ways, but I don't know. And again, maybe it's because of the simplification, which we need to have. We're a comedy podcast, ostensibly.
Yeah, I
Don't get too deep into it. But I'm like,
no.
it just seems, I don't know. It seems like the kind of psychological school that is just rife for people using it to prove they're right and you're wrong.
Well, okay, so
I'm acting like an adult here, and you're doing the kid part.
sure. I mean,
Me, 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 me.
it's a model, and all models have shortcomings. And it another one that's kind of like this is the attachment. People talk about attachment styles, and then they'll sort of label your attachment style and how that attachment style will typically lead you astray in relationships and things like that. Which again, if these things are treated the way models should be treated, which is, well, it's an incomplete, we need to take it with a grain of salt. It's just a way for us to contextualize what's happening and what it gives us is a place to start off from. It's not a thing like any model. You shouldn't be forcing it on every step of the process. It should be kind of a way for you to get started. You contextualize it creates an outline or a very rough map of what the issue is, and then you use that as a stepping off point. And then, maybe after a while, you won't even be making reference to that model or its concepts or anything else. is how models are supposed to be used, but unfortunately they get over applied, right? And when you're in an actual situation and you're trying to figure out what the issue is, you can hold on to that, the language and the lingo and the model too long, and instead start to take the practical situation and shoehorn it into the model rather than letting the model just kind of help you contextualize what's going on. Do you see what I'm saying?
Oh yeah. No, I mean, this is the classic, I don't like labels argument that exists in a variety of things, but therapy and behavioral models is a good example of, like, these things are useful as shorthand. Mm-hmm. They should not replace content.
Exactly. It's an analogy and a very imperfect one of reality, but it's not reality itself. And you can't, eventually you have to stop really thinking about the model and yeah. deal with what's in front of you. You can still use the model's concept to kind of help you interact with it, but if you hold on to the model and you just force everything to fit into it, that's going to be a problem.
Within our household, we often speak of emotional maturity, which I think is in a similar vein to, you know, transacting as an adult or whatever we're calling it. And that helps us sometimes get perspective. But it's not an answer in and of itself. It's just, it can be helpful if we're talking like, I'm just butting my head against this person. I don't understand. It's like, oh, they're coming from a sort of different perspective of emotional maturity. And so you need to be aware of that going into that. And that's useful information, but yeah, it's not a solution in and of itself.
No.
I think the idea, I understand the archetypes of child and parent. So I think the idea of recognizing that someone might be veering that way in their behavior or in how they are seeing me in an interaction can be useful information. Mm-hmm. I don't see anything wrong with that. I don't see what, I mean, and this is deep dive. I don't see how this provides solutions other than finger pointing.
Well, okay. So sometimes, like, there's no, as far as I know, and again, someone who's obviously my knowledge of transactional analysis is going to be limited by my, I don't really like it. So I might not give it a fair shake. But as far as I understand, there's no actual value judgment. For example, there might be appropriate times for you and I to have an interaction and a transaction where you're parental and I'm child. Like, let's say I'm sick, or let's say I'm injured, or let's say I'm going through a very difficult time and I'm crying and I need you to comfort me. You know, it's not unhealthy necessarily for two adult people like us to have that kind of relationship in the proper context. What the model is trying to help you do is see that sometimes when people are having problems, it's because they're having that kind of relationship in contexts that are not functional or adaptive.
Yeah, no. The concept makes total sense to me.
Okay.
As a thing that could cause friction between two people.
Sure. Yeah.
I do not see it's other than being like, oh, hey, pay attention. Y'all might be in different levels or whatever right now.
Ego, whatever.
I don't see how it's useful. And I also think the nomenclature and the taxonomy in question puts a lot of unintentional value judgments into it. There are circumstances where it's like that. But if you and I are having an issue and I'm acting like a child and you're acting like a parent, guess whose fault it's probably going to be seen to be?
Well, but also, like, what do you do next? And transactional analysis does give some guidance on
There's
that. Like, again.
never going to be a situation where it's like, good on you for acting like the child in this situation.
Right. Okay, but and like I said, transactional analysis tries to make a typology out of the different ways that the transactions can go bad, and then it tries to suggest ways to fix it. But it's mostly like a lot of models, a lot of therapy models. It's mostly about, well, if we make the people, the individuals, whether it's two or more people, aware of what's going on, sometimes that's like enough. Like they'll go, oh my gosh, now we realize what's going on, and now that we know, knowing is half the battle. Now that we know exactly what to do to fix it. And but to me, I mean, I don't find it super compelling or useful. I find other approaches do the same thing, except in a broader, more, I don't know, compelling and effective way. And some what I would suggest to Mick or anybody else who's been taught this, like when they were kids, like, oh, here's an interesting way to look at the world that'll help you interact with the world. I don't know if this is Mick's case, but sometimes the problems can arise when you have this model and you just can't let it go, right? You're looking at everything through these glasses, and maybe it's helping you adequately diagnose the situation. Let's just say that for the sake of argument. And but even if it helps you diagnose what the problem is, put a label on it, and maybe you know what the general gist of fixing it is, but there comes a point where you have to take the glasses off and you just have to do the work of whatever it is to fix the situation. And the model's not going to get you all the way there. Eventually, the model helps you contextualize it, helps you think about it, maybe helps you diagnose all that stuff, but then you have to do it. And that's not a thing that you can do, I effectively, in my opinion, with those glasses still on. Eventually, you have to take the glasses off and do the work.
I agree. My own personal mental health journey of recent years, and to be fair, I've run into this in so many other aspects of life, including a lot of my social science stuff in general. No model, there is not such thing as a permanent model. Everything are tools to be used when they are useful and not when they are not, which is, and it's very much along the lines where I've said before about, like, other than to get drugs, a diagnosis doesn't really matter, because if you think you might have ADHD, look up what people with ADHD do to cope and try those things out. And if they work for you, that's good. And it doesn't mean you have ADHD, and it doesn't matter if you have ADHD from that context. I might have picked a weird choice because you really kind of want some medication if you have ADHD. But boy, I've been dealing with instances related to OCD, bipolar disorder, even autism, none of which I have, but occasionally people who do will, like, talk about it and it will resonate with me. And so I look up, like, what are things, and I've found useful tools, and none of this means I have any of those things, or that I should live my life the way people do who have those conditions, but they're just useful tools. I like the idea, for lack of a better, it seems very a little simplistic, which again may be because we're simplifying it here, but
Maybe.
I don't hate the idea. It's I will say this, I think having brought this up and Mick having explained it and you having explained it, this may color my perspective going forward in what I hope will be a useful way. I'm not going to adopt this model in how I deal with things, but it's interesting thinking about the levels and how people are approaching, and especially recent things I've gone through, realizing that I parent most people, or at least I did until recently. But it's interesting.
Well, and of course, there's a general idea behind this that I think is valid. And most approaches that deal with trying to help people, two or more people get along, it almost always goes to communication, because of course it does. And it speaks to this idea that, I mean, the general idea and most approaches that try to deal with this will make this their theme, which is breakdowns in communication are happen. It's obvious that they would happen, and it's also obvious that when they happen, a lot of times it's simply because one person is in a headspace that's very different than the other person, and they're just talking right past each other. And you can call it adult, child, parent, whatever. You can call it whatever you want. That's kind of beside the point. I mean, maybe it'll help you work through it, like I said, a model does. But for the most part, if you can understand that communication is a process, like any process in the universe, does not always work the same or smoothly or in a way that we're going to like. And eventually what that comes down to is that I feel like you and I are talking about one thing in one way with one context, and you think something completely different. And it's just working out how we can get back on the same page, so to speak. And that's what all these approaches are trying to do by creating a model that'll help you map it out.
This has come up a few times recently between Trish and I in arguments that we have had, where we, when we talk about it later, it turns out one of us thought we were saying X and the other one was hearing Y. And in fact, actually one where I said things and she reacted a certain way, and I thought I knew what that meant, and that she was hearing Y, but it turned out she was hearing Z, and I hadn't even thought of that. So yeah, there's a lot of that. But also, it's not communications, boundaries. All therapy is about boundaries. It's all boundaries. If you think it's not boundaries, it's wrong. You're doing the therapy wrong. It's boundaries.
Well, and see, then there's a whole other
Yeah,
level of.
then yeah, boundaries. We're done with this. This is a boundary. We're out of time. We got to do a side quest.
Oh,
This is
we're
a
out of time.
boundary.
Okay, never mind.
See? Boundaries. It's all boundaries. Like the Boundary Waters. You ever been to the Boundary Waters?
So, which ones?
I don't know. That's what they call them. The ones that Minnesota, next to Canada. How many about? Have you been to any Boundary Waters?
I don't think so.
Well, then why'd you ask which ones?
I thought,
Pick a
because
number between four and a half and four.
I thought you had certain ones in mind.
I only know the one. We have a lot of sci-fi ones.
Maybe there are a lot of sci-fi ones.
I think we've had this one before. What is going on with these cards?
I don't know.
Purge a little space junk. Lose 5 pounds. No, I'm kidding. That's no. Purge a little space junk. Sell or donate something you don't use anymore. And we got a quote here. You should know this one. Both because you should know this one and because we've had it before. Train yourself to let go of everything you fear to lose.
That from Star Wars or something? Sounds like a Star
Could
Wars
be.
thing.
Could be. Let me read it again, see if you can get it this time. Train yourself to let go of everything you fear to lose.
Yeah, I mean, I was getting that it was Yoda, and I think I even remember the scene, but I don't remember him saying it like that.
Sorry. Lose to fear everything. Train yourself. Let go to.
That's not the problem. I remember, I couldn't tell you what I remember the line to be, but I don't remember it to be that.
Do
But
you remember when Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi came out, and every once in a while Yoda said things that were just slightly different clauses, but still made basic sense? And then Phantom Menace came out, and he just was like saying words like he was drawing them out of a goddamn hat. Do you remember this? Like, they really pushed it in the prequels. Like, this Yoda talks fucked up.
Well, someone recently, either this was recently
Yeah.
brought out in an interview with Lucas, or this was something he said a long time ago and now it's making the rounds again, but he was saying the reason he had Yoda talk like that was because he thought it would make people watching pay more attention to what he was saying. Especially kids, he thought. Especially kids. That's what he said. I don't know.
I believe he said it. I don't believe anything he said. Do you know people are going around now, like, legitimately talking, like, naming the character Darth Vader was him sowing the seeds of it being Luke's dad? And it's not. And like, we know that, and we knew that. But suddenly now we're like, oh.
He's admitted that he didn't know until.
Yeah. But he also before then claimed that he did. Like.
Yeah, I mean, I guess so.
He can't make up his mind over whether or not he planned all this out or not. But who cares? He's got $4 billion and you don't got worried no more. Anyway. So anyway, purge yourself of some space junk. Like maybe some trivia about Star Wars. Get rid of that space junk. Second season of Andor is out. I think you're supposed to be watching that.
Yeah, I don't have Disney Plus anymore. I haven't had it for
the
a
whole,
while.
The whole world is like, Star Wars sucks, but Andor's good. I keep thinking I'm going to watch it. All right.
Yeah,
well,
I mean,
I'll watch
thought...
it and I'll tell you what happens.
Oh, okay.
I have to watch the first season. All right. If you want us to destroy the school of thought upon which you have based your very existence, please email us, themagicaltalkinghead@gmail.com. Crushing dreams and ruining lives is kind of our whole deal. So enjoy that. No, but email us with whatever you want. We don't care. We have no control. The hat does it. And we're like, whoa, a hat with the email. And then also go to the blog and tell us what you thought about the things we said about what you wrote. See, it's a cycle. It's one hand washes the other. So go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghead.com, and tell us your thoughts on transcendental meditation or whatever it was we were talking about. And then also write in, and then also listen again next week. Yeah, there should be a fun little ending here, but damned if I know what it is. Baba Booey? Is that a thing?
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.